used to be.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer, on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. This is News Talk STL.
Yeah, there's a big hole in the heart of this country. Climate activists say there's a big hole in the ozone layer, or there was, and Armageddon's coming. First, it was an ice age back in the 70s, and now it's global warming. And it's always fun when we talk with someone who can make some sense out of it and just take a perspective that is more realistic. That's what Gregory Wrightstone, a geologist and the executive director of the CO2 Coalition, is going to share with us now. He's a best-selling author of A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. On this warming up day in mid-Missouri and flyover country in St. Louis and in Midwestern USA, you're joining us, Greg. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's always good. The last time I was in St. Louis, I was giving a talk at the Phyllis Schlafly Eagles annual meeting there, and Antifa came after me. They didn't choose any of the other people. They had three people that barged in with megaphones, and it got quite interesting for a while. But the wonderful police there escorted them outside us. So whenever I think of St. Louis, I think of Antifa. It was quite challenging. I loved it.
Yeah, Antifa knows no bounds, do they? Just like we were just talking to one of the survivors of the October 7th event. He was there in a kibbutz, spent 30 hours in the safe space, and it just seems like no matter whether it's domestically or abroad, the wheels have come off of any kind of restriction on virtuous behavior at all. Now let's talk about. Let's talk about the warming situation, the CO2. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that, it seems to me that I'd rather be net, I'd rather be too warm than too cold, because I can manage warm, but I can't keep my body cold, especially keep my body warm and cold if the fossil fuels are restricted or I can't afford to heat my house. What's the truth there?
Well, let's just start. We are in a warming period. It has been warming in fits and starts. It's had decades long pauses in the warming, but we're generally warming. That's just a historical and scientific fact. It's warmed about 1.2 degrees centigrade since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution in the late 1700s. But that warming is hugely beneficial to Earth's ecosystems and humanity. It's driving longer growing seasons. For example, in the continental United States, the growing season has lengthened by more than 2 weeks since 1900. We see that this warming, and we're actually seeing most of the warming is taking place at night by an increase in temperature of the coldest nighttime temperatures. That's good for agriculture, and it's also good for the human condition. What do you fear if you've got an apple orchard? What do you fear the most? It's a late spring killing frost that could just wipe you out for the year. Because of this modest warming, those are much rarer. And again, killing frosts end earlier in the spring and arrive later in the fall. So in my new book, the title is A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. And so I've gone beyond the fact that there is no climate crisis, and there isn't. I've gone beyond that, way beyond that, to look at by almost every metric we look at. Earth's ecosystems are thriving, prospering, and humanity is benefiting from the combination of warming and more CO2. We should celebrate that. Don't be scared. History tells us that we should welcome the warmth and fear the cold, because the warm periods throughout human history have always been hugely beneficial. And those warm periods were warmer than today. We know that for sure.
Well, being a truth seeker like I am, and our listeners are, and I'm sure you are, you always look at the other side of the argument, and people, of course, on the Armageddon side of the global climate change have adopted that language now, climate change instead of global warming. And they are now saying that natural disasters, the, you know, the they claim every hurricane, every tornado the wildfires in California. They ignore some of the other, real facts about the real frequency of those events and the mismanagement of the forest floor with smoky burying it and leaving too much fuel without doing controlled burns, for instance. But is there some truth to that? I'm a diver. I don't know if you like to dive, Greg, but we like to dive, and man, we've gone to down to the Palancar Reef in Cozumel for years, for decades, and you know that we've seen the ravages of warming on the coral reefs, and so there is some impact in the oceans. How do you answer those critics who say, well, you're ignoring the other side of the story, Gregory?
Well, no. Coral. In fact, I'm just completing our next children's book. It's a scientific look at coral reefs. And we find that we've heard stories of the Great Barrier Reef being destroyed and dying, and nothing could be further from the truth. Dr. Peter Ridd is a member of the CO2 Coalition. They've been detailed cataloging the Great Barrier Reef for more than 30 years now. And the coral coverage on the Great Barrier Reef is at an all-time high. Additionally, they call it the Coral Triangle. North of the Great Barrier Reef in Indonesia and the Philippines is 2 degrees centigrade warmer, the sea surface temperatures, yet corals thrive there. We see, if you take a look at a graph that I'd love to send you to put up, showing temperature versus coral growth, and coral growth is hugely impacted by temperature rises, and it's not negative, it's positive. The warmer the temperature, the faster the corals grow. So we can't look at just one. We might, who knows what happened to that one reef you were swimming on. But we know for a fact that warmer, hotter temperatures, corals thrive in that. They don't.
I think it has a lot to do with the pollution from poor sanitation management in Cancun and Cozumel, the traffic over the ocean liner traffic has just exploded. They don't have the same sanitation practices, because you see these great pads of algae and moss that the maintenance workers have to sweep it off the beach daily or bury it in the beach. So there's a lot more to the story, but I guess that makes the point, right? They are looking, folks who are apoplectic over this are looking at one side of the story. It's almost become a religion to them, hasn't it?
Oh, it is. It's a climate cult. People need to believe in something, and many people have turned away from religion and have replaced that by a belief in this climate disaster nonsense. It's people need something to believe in, and what better to adopt as a climate cult than we're going to save the world? The fact of the matter is, the world doesn't need saving. It's thriving and prospering. The best thing we can look at, what's happening with agriculture. Where you are, agriculture is a huge resource and a big component of your gross domestic product. Well, agriculture has been exploding and breaking records year after year after year with warming temperatures. And more CO2 is driving CO2 fertilization effect. And then that's turbocharged by our use of nitrogen fertilizer. They think that perhaps 40% of the agricultural productivity growth since 1950 is attributable to the increased use of nitrogen fertilizer, which they want to ban. And we saw what happens when you ban nitrogen fertilizer 2 years ago in Sri Lanka. Their entire agricultural-based economy collapsed. They went after the president, Rajapaksa, barely escaped with his life. They're back to using nitrogen fertilizer. And bear in mind, how do you make nitrogen fertilizer? It takes natural gas, hydrocarbons, fossil fuels to make this beneficial fertilizer that all of your farmers use. And if you're a backyard farmer, if you buy a sack of fertilizer, it has the more nitrogen, the better.
Yeah. We're talking with Gregory Wrightstone, author of A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. Also publishes a what, semi-monthly, twice-monthly newsletter, right? Inconvenient Facts, right, Greg?
Yeah, well, we've got the, at the CO2 Coalition, we have a newsletter. It goes out about, we don't bombard you with once a week, sometimes twice, sometimes that depends how busy I am. We just got back from Wyoming, spent 4 days there and 2 days in Oklahoma. But when you get my our newsletter from the CO2 Coalition, people tell me they open it up and they look forward to it because every time they read it, they go, huh, I didn't know that. Isn't that interesting? Because I want you to be, I want it to be interesting and informative.
And you can learn more at co2coalition.org. You know, when it comes to the periodic changes, I have a good atmospheric science friend who's a professor at University of Missouri, and he's co-authored a couple books on this as well, Tony Lupo. I don't know if you know Tony, but he talks about some of the natural, you know, the way the sun, the Earth revolves around the sun, the way the solar systems are doing their thing, the way there's a lot of celestial impact on this that is just, it's not new news to people that study these things, you know, to the physicists and astroscientists. But you don't hear that. You don't hear that kind of news filter into the equation as to just how much of this is just unavoidable natural science and planetary reality, and how much of this is really man-made, whether it's good or bad or not. You know, I mean, it's interesting how everyone wants to pin the tail on humankind's donkey, but that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, it's not. And does CO2 have a warming effect on the atmosphere because it's a greenhouse gas? Yes, but it's quite modest and greatly overwhelmed by those natural forces that Anthony Lupo has told you about. We've seen since the dawn of the first great civilizations that arose during what was called the Bronze Age or the Minoan Warm Period. All these great civilizations rose up, the Hittites, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Harappan civilization in the Indus River Valley. All these great civilizations rose up in this really, really warm period, much warmer than today. And then when it started getting cold, all of those empires and civilizations collapsed within a relatively short time. And it was pretty clearly it was related to the cooling of the earth and the atmosphere that led to crop failure, famine, pestilence, and mass depopulation. So what history tells us, and that's repeated time and again during the Roman warm period and then the medieval warm period, and now we're in the current modern warming period. All of these warming periods, we saw humanity flourished and the human condition improved. So it's just the opposite of what we're being told. And people like Dr. Michael Mann, John Kerry, they don't buy into this. Well, they might call me a science denier. I would call them history deniers because they're denying what history tells us.
Yeah. And what the science, you know, when it came to COVID, they said follow the science. However, they want to be selective science followers, I guess, right? Well, maybe you should send a copy of your book, Gregory, to Greta Thunberg and her friends, because she needs to have a little bit of education, too.
Yeah, she needs to go back to school. She's become quite wealthy, as it turns out. I'm okay with that, though. I mean, I'm a capitalist. I don't mind people making money, but don't be a hypocrite while you're doing it.
There you go. Gregory Wrightstone, thanks for joining me. I hope folks will pick up the book and sign up on your newsletter. They can learn an awful lot about you and the CO2 Coalition at co2coalition.org. Thanks for being our guest this morning on The Tobler Show. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Well, there you go. I guess we can sleep well. And maybe we should plant those peach and grapevine, peach trees and grapevines and other fruit trees and not worry about a frost. I mean, you know, at least not as much worry about a frost. I always worry every year when my grapevines is they bud and they start to, you know, bud out and then we get the frost. Well, maybe there's some hope there. Hey, when we come back, it's your turn. 314-912-1019. Let's take some calls and talk about it. Are you thinking about maybe getting a fire sale on an EV? Are you going to wait till that technology comes around? How about a hybrid? Maybe that's the way to go if you want to hedge your bets on this. 314-912-1019 here on the Randy Tobler Show on News Talk STL 101.9 94.1.
Let that rhythm get into you.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. Talk lines are open now at 314-912-1019.
Welcome back to the program. 7:25. We'll be talking with Virginia Kruta in just a little bit. And at 8:05, right at the top of that hour, Gabe Pfeiffer will join us from Mike Ferguson in the Morning. Anxious to get his take on that, on the days and the week's events. There's just been a ton going on, and I don't know where to start. One thing I've been dismayed by is what's going on in Fulton County, Georgia. I've been more than dismayed. I've been frustrated, angered, disappointed, bitter over it, because, you know, we're really witnessing the persecution of Donald Trump. He earns a lot of pushback. He earns a lot of criticism for his behavior, some of his comments. I think he's too mean-spirited sometimes against other Republicans that may not be in exact lockstep with him. I get worried about authoritarian style that he has. I understand he has endorsed, guess who? Laura Trump for RNC co-chair. Well, you know, I mean, I think that he, you know, talk about loyalty to me and, you know, almost genuflect. I get worried about that. Nonetheless, that said, he's been persecuted unfairly. We can say that. I mean, look at the $355 million penalty that the crazy loony Judge Engoron imposed on him a week ago Friday, with now, what, another almost $100 million? He's talking about $455, $460 million he's got to pony up just to make an appeal because of the crazy laws in New York. They want to bring him down, bring his family down, their ability to run their business. And then you go to Fulton County, Georgia. And you've got these people just overtly lying, just lying on the stand. Nathan Wade, Fannie's beau and hire after the relationship was started. And all along the way, they've said that the relationship started after he was hired to be a prosecutor in her office. Well, they caught him in a big, big lie. Here was the back and forth between the defense attorney for one of the many defendants, along with Donald Trump, that Fannie has indicted on this RICO, crazy RICO scheme, and Nathan Wade. Listen.
I received.
You would go to the condo and talk about any document that you received?
Absolutely.
Okay, go ahead.
Absolutely.
Any other reasons?
None come to mind. No, sir.
And would you say that was frequent? When I say frequent, do you think prior to November 1st of 2021, you were at the condo more than 10 times?
No, sir.
So it'd be less than 10 times?
Yes, sir.
So if phone records were to reflect that you were making phone calls from the same location as the condo before November 1st of 2021, and it was on multiple occasions, the phone records would be wrong?
If phone records reflected that, yes, sir.
They'd be wrong?
They'd be wrong.
Okay. Where did you live during that time?
So he basically said that he was there, what, 10 times? Well, the phone records suggest at least 35 visits prior to his hire in November of 21. It indicates Wade twice arrived in the area late at night and left early the next morning before they said their relationship became romantic. You know, the timeline just is important in this aspect. If they were a couple before she hired him, you know, she may have at least violated the spirit of the anti-nepotism laws, if not the letter of the law. I don't know. I guess that since they didn't have a formal marital relationship or anything, that probably wouldn't pass muster. But it doesn't pass, you know, just the optics of it are just stinking. They use this tool called CellHawk to determine where Wade spent his time in 2021. It's considered by law enforcement, I didn't know this, to be the gold standard in cell phone record analytics, Mittelstadt said. He's a longtime investigator for defense attorneys. This is really crazy. They did a subpoena to AT&T, and that's how they found his whereabouts. So it really smacks of corruption. Certainly perjury, and I think both Wade and Fannie Willis, I guess she prefers Fannie, but it's so fun to say Fannie. I think she was actually Fanny before she became Fonny. That's my understanding. They're going to lose their law license. I'd probably be taken off the case. Now, whether someone else in her office takes up the case is to be determined, as is everything else as of now. But you can't deny what the facts of the cell phone records say, right? And apparently there were thousands of texts, thousands of phone calls. And that's okay what people want to do, but it harkens back to the Bill Clinton era when, you know, he didn't come clean under oath with what happened. You could argue, what is it our business? I think there is probably a valid argument there. What is it our business? But since it's become the state's business, since she has, you know, I think over aggressively tried to use a racketeering law to somehow involve election disputes, which in my understanding has not happened before. I'm not an attorney, but everything I've read, everything from, you know, very credible sources says that's not the proper application of the RICO statutes. And so I guess what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If they lie, they've lied. And if they stand there and say or sit there and say one thing and the exact opposite is true, and it's not just a matter of, well, yeah, I was there 10 times, it was actually 12. Or I was there, you know, I made, 100 texts and it was 110. I don't think anyone's going to argue with that. That's not the story. It's these gross lies about what really happened. And I think that's just, it just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. We have a caller, Jerome.
She doesn't want to go on it. This is a different caller than the one we were expecting. But she was telling us about the story earlier about the woman that was killed by the illegal, that she was watching another news station and they didn't even mention anything about him, that he wasn't supposed to be here, anything like that, almost as if they are trying to protect him rather than protecting us.
Yeah, he's not an American citizen, and it's been reported that he's a Venezuelan illegal. Now, again, that's what we're reporting. I don't go out of my way to do all of the confirmatory, purely journalistic research that I should. Okay, I'm telling you what's being reported on Fox News and on others who do their homework, and that's what's been reported. There's larger questions, whether you're from Venezuela or whether you're from Joliet or whether you're from, you know, the University of Georgia campus living in a dorm, down the street from this woman. It doesn't matter. People have become soulless. And there seems to be no bounds on behavior anymore. And what would you expect when people see in San Francisco and in other jurisdictions These mobs just running into stores, Walgreens, other outlets, Targets, others, just indiscriminately running out with bags full of goodies, jewelry stores being looted and robbed. Prosecutors saying, well, if it's up to $900 and something, that's okay. We're going to overlook it. No, it's not okay. I don't care if it's a piece of bubblegum from the checkout aisle. It's not okay. And the slippery slope applies here because you're dealing with young people generally that start these criminal trajectories early in their life. They become undisciplined. They think that they're immune from any kind of accountability. And it starts with a piece of bubblegum or a pack of batteries at the checkout aisle. They get away with that and they think, well, I need some new socks. I need a new T-shirt. Oh, that's the next thing. That gets stuffed into their pants or their coat and they're walking out, you know. And then it escalates. And I just think we have to have, if not a zero tolerance policy for low-level crime, we need to have a close to zero tolerance. And maybe it's more important while the wiring, the neurons, the judgment centers, the discernment is developing in a young person's mind rather than later, after those things are more hardwired. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, but I've read a fair amount of developmental psychology. And especially with boys, especially with young men, they have testosterone surging. They're aggressive. They tend to have the development of discernment later than girls. And so they need to be molded. That's what's called child rearing. I mean, growing up is learning from mistakes. Well, if no one's going to help them learn and define what a mistake is, then it becomes natural behavior to either kill a girl in Georgia or pull out your gun because you have a dispute after the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl parade rally in Kansas City. I think these are all basically variations on the same theme. I, for one, don't understand it. I don't. Why is someone raiding, you know, looting my, well, and burglarizing my brother's little church in an exurb of St. Louis at 3 o'clock this morning? Really? I mean, now in my world, if those people are caught, I understand that he has one of the perps on tape. And I would love to see those people put in the stocks right at the exit ramp off of the highway onto the artery that runs to the church. Just put them in the stocks, just like they did in the old days. Make a very public event of it. Maybe a 24/7 video feed on their Facebook page. This is what happens when you do bad things. Where are the judges? Where are the prosecutors? Where are the legislators that will think of some creative accountability? You notice I didn't use the word punishment. Creative accountability for criminals. What's wrong with our juvenile justice system? Well, they're young. See, they use the same argument, but in a dysmorphic way. Well, they're going to excuse it away because no, don't excuse it away. Use it as a learning opportunity. Make them accountable and make them an example to others who need to understand what happens when you do wrong things. What is wrong with this analysis? Tell me. If you're a bleeding heart liberal and you just switched over to News Talk STL from NPR, God love you. Welcome home. Welcome home. We're glad you're here. Tell me where I'm wrong. Put them in the stocks, but then give them a big hug when they get out of the stocks. Okay, there is a time for a hug. Take them to church. Have them read about salvation and grace and sinfulness and about sanctification. You know, have them hear a little bit of the good word rather than I'm from the government and I'm here to subsidize your miscreant behavior. I don't know, man. Am I just getting to be an old cynical geezer or what? Jerome, help me out here. It doesn't seem to be that hard of a solution.
No, you're absolutely correct with all that. I do appreciate that you also emphasize you're not just trying to send into a gulag. You know, you are.
No.
You need to feel some sort of consequence for the action because there are people out there that are the recidivists. They keep getting in and out and in and out, and the courts are just not doing enough about it. But do some community service. Do some volunteer work. You know, have them do something where they can see the consequences of their actions and maybe gain a little bit of empathy. And I think that that's where we're really failing. Yeah. It's on the one part, you know, who's at home raising these people? Who is supposed to be there when you have teachers? You know, the teachers are not teaching us ethics. They're not teaching us morals. They're teaching us, you know, about bathrooms and drag queens now. But if the courts are not going to be doing that, then we need to have somebody out there that can say, look, you know, if you are stealing, you know, socks because you don't have any money and you need new socks, okay, we're not going to throw you in life in prison. But when you see these videos from California, especially, they walk into Walmarts and they just start grabbing stuff by the bag load. They grab iPhones out of the Apple store and there's no remorse. You know, they just walk in. They don't care. So how are we supposed to fix that if there's no accountability and there's no program in place or something for them to be able to see how this is affecting your community? You know, businesses are going to be pulling out. Now your community is going to be poorer. That's going to lead to more crime. You know, we need something in place to kind of help that, especially right. If the parents are not going to instill that in their kids.
Well, you know, and you know, I don't connect well with the social media addiction that young people have, but it seems as though that may be playing into it. I think there is some positive to be found in social media, sharing happy moments, celebrating birthdays, achievements. I get that, real achievements. On the other hand, just because someone posts a new profile picture and you can get, you know, 2,000 of your friends to push a button that says like, does that maybe lead to, before a person can handle it, too much self-aggrandizement and self elevation, which then translates into, well, man, I can get what I want pretty easy just by posting to social media, and so I can also get what I want just by taking it, because they're not really looking out at that kind of, you know, behavior too much. I just wonder if it's all it's all about me instead of all about others. And perhaps along with being in the stocks for a while, if you do something silly like that, maybe that service phase is what's next. If you steal something, maybe you clean up the road, you help fill potholes, you do something, and you get paid for it. But guess what? You then have to go in with the person that you perpetrated that crime against. And if you stole their big screen TV or their DVD player or their cell phone or their computer or whatever, you go in and you have to put your money down on the table and watch them get that back. I mean, there has to be some connection between that and, I did the right thing and now I'm making up for it. I think that may lead to some remorse, which then translates to a change in behavior. I don't know. I just, there's not enough gratitude in this world, and there's not enough remorse and repentance in this world. I think we need to change that. Hey, clip one, Donald Trump has an idea on that, Jerome, and I like it. He said this the other day, and I thought, man, what a home run this is at a rally. Listen.
We're going to end the so-called Department of Education. We might have one desk, one person, just to make sure everyone's speaking English. Let's got to have a little bit of regulation, Let's try and keep it so that you can only, that we're going to focus on some English. But after that, you can go ahead and do what you're going to do.
Well, I think eliminating the Department of Education is probably not going to happen. That was one of Ronald Reagan's big mistakes, was he implemented the Department of Education after it, I think, been authorized actually at the end of the previous administration, Carter's, and he went ahead and implemented it. That was a mistake. And we've seen what's happened. The educators, as you said, Jerome, they're more interested in drag queens affirming your gender misbehavior and misidentity than they are. And, teaching you reading, writing, arithmetic, and the right way to behave. Very simple. Well, why don't we step aside, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Virginia Cruda about the South Carolina primary today, about the immigration issue and what happened in University of Georgia, and something that Neil Cavuto said that caught my ear. We'll share all those with you with Virginia Cruda when we come back. And Gabe Pfeiffer joins us at 8:05. Stay there.
Warrior, woke destroyer on News Talk STL.
So some of you may have heard that I've had the great honor of being endorsed by my father-in-law, President Trump, to co-chair the Republican National Committee. I got some fans in here, okay. You guys like this idea. Well, I'll tell you guys, this is a position for which I never imagined I would run, but I also never imagined that our country would be in such dire straits.
Welcome back to the Tobler Show. Virginia Cruda joins us now, writes on the Daily Wire. Of course, you hear her on News Talk STL across the week as well. Virginia, what do you think about Trump world now being in control or partial control of the RNC if it all unfolds? What are your thoughts about that?
I don't like the idea that a particular candidate can direct who is in charge of the governing body of the party. It rubs me the wrong way, just in general. So that's kind of where I am on the whole thing.
Yeah, well, I feel the same way. It's frightening to me, frankly, because I think, well, if nothing else, at a minimum, I think it gives more credence to the other side's argument that, well, I'm going to use the word fascism, right? I mean, it becomes sort of an authoritarian from the top all the way down, one party, one voice system within that party. And I right. think that that's just going to give them more voice. That's why I really hope that Nikki Haley stays in the race. It's not because I particularly think she's the best candidate, but I think Well, she certainly would have a better chance against Biden, according to the polls. But I like to have another voice in the race. How about you?
Well, yeah, I do like that. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. And, you know, there are people who are saying that she's only in it because she wants to see if Trump gets convicted, and then she'll just be the de facto nominee because there are people who won't vote for Trump if he gets convicted on a criminal offense. And you know, there may be some truth to that. I don't know. But I will say this, you know, it does take some guts to stay in the race when everybody is telling you to get out.
Yeah. I think she's showing her spine.
Mm-hmm, the pressure that she's under to bow to the party's wishes to, and again, and none of this is because I think she's necessarily the best candidate. I don't know. It's really going to depend because, and I've said this before, I guess the best word is my concern going into anything with Trump is that if you look at what happened in the second 2 years of his first presidency, I don't think we can expect a second term to be any different. So assuming that things carry on as they typically do. One, you know, maybe Republicans lose control of the House because that's looking possible, if not likely, right? Republicans lose control of the House. What happens? I guarantee you within weeks, Donald Trump will be impeached. Guarantee it. Okay. Man. And if they keep control of the Senate or gain it a couple of years in, you run that risk of it'll happen again. So, and typically sitting presidents lose power at midterm elections. So you're going into it with whatever he's got. So assume Trump wins in 2024. If he wins in 2024 and Democrats have control of the House, they will impeach him in the first 2 years. They won't get him removed if Republicans have the Senate. Or if it's really, really close, they probably won't be able to get him removed. But they'll still impeach him, and they will waste time doing it.
Wow. We need the Fox News breaking sounder here.
Yeah. Then you get to 2026, and if history holds and Democrats take more seats in Congress, then it just happens again, and maybe they're more successful. I just see a lot of our time being wrapped up in continuing prosecution by Congress of a Republican president. Now, that's not to say that if Nikki Haley were elected, they wouldn't do it to her, too. I mean, but the precedent is already set with Donald Trump. They've already decided he's guilty of something, and they're going to keep going after him until they get him.
Yeah, you're right. And it's a tremendous distraction from the type of
exactly
return to small government leadership that, you know, conservatives and Republicans at least used to want.
Exactly. and the thing is, the divided government and the fact that there are Republicans who can't stand him either means that he is going to have almost no choice but to govern by executive order, which is the opposite of what conservatives say they want.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And it leaves him open to everything being overturned after the next election, which is exactly what happened when Biden took office. So a lot of these things, a lot of these great border controls that Trump put in place that people are talking about, that, hey, if we just still had that, we'd be in good shape. Well, you know what? If Congress had put those things in place instead of Trump individually, it would have been a lot harder for Biden to undo it.
I agree. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's administration after administration, we seem to be turning into an imperial governance style in this country, right? I mean, where power is concentrated in the Oval Office, you know, the Congress impeaches and they saber rattle and they subpoena executive branch officials and they, you know, rattle on about Alejandro Mayorkas and they impeach him. But nothing really gets done unless the magic stroke of the pen and the phone, like Obama right. said, you know? Now, well, so right. in a related discussion, I want you to listen to what Neil Cavuto said, and I think Neil Cavuto probably represents a wider swath of the center-right electorate than we might imagine. That's my theory, but I want to know your theory once you hear it. Here's what he said to Chip Roy the other day. Take a listen. Clip two, Jerome.
We could reclaim the mantle of fiscal responsibility. We could help markets by saying we're going to be actually responsible about what we're doing. We could stop having a bureaucracy that gets funded. Because guess what? If Republicans vote for all that stuff, they're going to be funding the LNG bans. They're going to be funding the attacks on our gas stoves in New York. They're going to be funding all of the EV mandates that are going to cripple our economy and make the cars more expensive. They're going to fund the open borders that Mayorkas is sicking on the American people. So let's not do that. Let's restrain that bureaucracy. And I think that'll be better for markets, better for Trump, better for Americans, better for prosperity. We just need Republicans to lead.
But our Republicans are not leading. And no offense to you, sir. I mean, you guys look like the Keystone Cops. You can't agree on anything. And there's now everyone wants, you know, the speaker's head. I don't know where you stand on that. But to insult.
Okay. So, I mean, he nailed it, right? The Republican Party is in disarray now. Yes, there's a probably 30 to 40% at most core base that will follow Donald Trump and, you know, the MAGA wing, if you will, the Freedom Caucus. But I don't know if that's enough to get a general election victory from the Oval Office all the way down through Congress. I'm not confident of that.
No, and the problem we have, it's the same problem, actually, that we have in Missouri, if you want to look at it that way, is that a lot of the Republicans that are elected are not necessarily conservatives. Because you and I both know that a Republican from Mississippi is not the same as a Republican from Massachusetts. They're just not they're not the same people. A Republican from Massachusetts would be a Democrat in Mississippi in most cases.
Yeah.
So if you go by policy and personal, you know, governmental philosophy, that's just how it works. And so you have this, you know, for lack of a better term, melting pot of Republicans that aren't actually all conservative. You don't get a homogenous mix. You get this really, really divided group. And the problem that we have on the Republican side, and Democrats say this about Republicans all the time to make a point, but they're wrong. Republicans do not fall in line. They are far more likely to vote against party if they feel a principle is being violated than Democrats. Now, I will say this, though. You're seeing that more with Democrats, like Rashida Tlaib telling Michigan voters to not fill in Biden's name because she's mad at him about the way he's handling the Israel-Hamas war, mainly because she's mad he's being too nice to Israel. But when you see, and the caveat is she's telling them to do that in the primary. I guarantee you when it comes time for the general election, she won't be telling them to do that.
Bingo, you nailed it.
Biden against Donald Trump,
right?
She will tell them to fall in line, and she will fall in line, whether she agrees with Biden or not, because she can't stand the opposition.
It could be a jellyfish floating in the ocean, and they would coalesce behind it to defeat Donald Trump. And that's a lesson that the Republican Party needs to learn. Virginia, we're up against the clock. Thanks much for your time. Always appreciate it. When we come back, Gabe Pfeiffer joins us from Mike Ferguson in the Morning. Don't miss that at 8:05. Lots coming up on the last hour of the program.